So let's see. All right, so breathing. We talked for a couple of weeks there about, in a beginning way, about breathing, starting with talking about the relationship between the unguided or natural breath and manipulating the breath. Talked a little bit about how those different instructions live in the insight meditation world and in some of the lineages. And today I want to dive just right into ways to manipulate the breath, ways to work with the breath in an intentional way. So some of what I'm going to bring forward here comes directly from the Hatha Yoga traditions and the traditions that frame breath practice as pranayama. I'll say a bit about that word in a moment. And other suggestions are variations of that come through a couple of different lineage streams, both Buddhist and Hindu. And some of these are, you know, of course, ancient techniques that have been, you know, remodeled and, you know, retrofitted and, you know, given extra mufflers and shocks by the postmodern world. So at some point, maybe not tonight, but at some point soon, we'll touch on we'll touch on big breaths like Wim Hof breathing and holotropic breathwork kind of breathing and different ways that you might intentionally hyperventilate, you know, for love and glory. But tonight I'm going to start with talking about slow breaths. And the basic structure here is a structure just from physiology that, of course, the breath breathes in and out, duh. And, but the breath has this connection, as we've talked about before, to the autonomic nervous system. And so there's a very general, maybe overly simplistic way of thinking about the breath, that the inhale activates and the out breath deactivates. Now, that doesn't always mean that the in-breath gives you more energy and the out-breath relaxes you. It can, but it also might not. And that really depends on the situation you're in. It also doesn't mean that the in-breath is kind of stirs things up and the out-breath, you know, like settles things down. Think of these as a fractal. You know, in any moment, right, we're either breathing in or out or holding the breath. And we keep breathing in and out for the most part when we're doing almost everything, except when we're swimming underwater or holding our breath for some other reason. But we can be quite emotionally distressed, you know, having a strong, big emotion, and we can be breathing in and out, and we can be extremely calm, super chilled out, and be breathing in and out. And so the in-breath, when we're super chill, you know, has a very different effect in terms of activating than when we're quite stimulated, you know, and likewise the out-breath. So in most moments, I think our general activation state, so whether we're in generally a calm and feeling safe kind of state, or we're in a more stressful, activated state, that general state or that context is going to determine more about whether we feel activated or calm than what exactly the breath is doing. But the breath is a lever or a doorway into affecting our state in that way. So if you breathe in certain ways, you slow down the breath, you hold the breath, you lengthen the breath, you breathe a little faster, that'll change, that'll give some information into your state. And it's one of the ways that we can most directly work with the nervous system state that we're in. So in a very simple way, the inhale activates and the exhale deactivate. So the inhale supports the movement of energy and the movement of muscular energy in the body. And the exhale supports the letting go of energy, the calming, the stabilizing, the settling. Let's talk a little bit about the physiology of breathing. So, of course, there's the pathway where the breath comes into the body. I'm going to generally encourage, like a lot of breath teachers, that we almost always breathe through the nose. There are a few examples of times when it's helpful to breathe through the mouth. But generally, breathing through the nose, it warms the air. It filters the air because the sinuses have all these little hairs that filter out allergens and dust and viruses and all sorts of things. So the air is warmed, filtered, and in a way more measured. It comes in a little bit more slowly through the nose. All of that is what the nose is meant to do. If we breathe through the mouth, a whole bunch of things that you mostly don't want to happen tend to happen. Not if you breathe through the mouth a few times, but if you get a mouth breathing pattern over many, many years, it can be very, very destructive for health. So it'll actually change the way your jaw is shaped. It'll change the way you chew. And the breath coming in unfiltered and cold is a lot more work for the lungs. And the lungs are much more likely to get infections, and they're really working in a whole way that they don't have to. So you may have seen people jogging or running around or doing exercise with their mouths taped shut. That is to prevent folks to prevent them from unconsciously breathing through the mouth. I'm happy that I don't have to do that. Like when I'm exercising, I can just tell myself to not breathe through my mouth and it mostly happens. This is good. But when you are exercising or like if you're out jogging, I'll encourage you to just give it some attention. And if you find yourself like getting a little short of breath and you want to, you know, take a break from the nose and take one of those big old fat inhales through the mouth, instead of doing that, you might consider slowing down a little bit, keeping your mouth closed and taking a long breath in through the nose and really trying to stick with the nose as best you can. One time when you might tape the mouth, where you're not conscious to keep the mouth closed, is when you're sleeping. And so this is a thing that some folks do sometimes now. It can be helpful for snoring, but it's actually just helpful to train us to breathe through the nose when you're asleep. Don't worry, like you won't die. Please don't, anyway. If your nose is completely like super locked up, congested, maybe don't do it, or you know, test it out for a while before you actually go to sleep with your mouth taped shut. But it can actually be quite wonderful. And there's this new book, new-ish, called Breath by James Nestor, who goes through a bunch of, who tells the story of himself going through a bunch of breathing experiments, one of which includes plugging his nose and breathing only through his mouth for 10 days, which completely like destroyed his health and well-being, and he felt like hell. And then doing the opposite and, you know, doing a bunch of tests and stuff, and then doing the opposite, taping the mouth and breathing only through the nose, after which he felt incredible. And so he did the mouth taping while sleeping mechanism, just taping the center of the mouth closed to remind you to keep your mouth closed. So you can look up more about that, but the general instruction here is to breathe through the nose. Sometimes if I'm jogging, it's really cold out and I'm a little snotty. This is TMI, but like I'll breathe in through the nose and I might like breathe out a little bit through the mouth just so that I'm not getting like, you know, boogers, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, even then, it's better to just stop, blow your nose, keep breathing through your nose. So try to breathe through your nose as much as you can. And you can look up more information about that. I'll post some links on that. From the passageway of the air in, air comes down into the lungs. And the lungs are not just two big bags, but they have lots of little sacs and wrinkles and areas. And so there's different ways to breathe so that you actually get the breath into the various corners of the lungs. But the breath is drawn into the lungs by a muscle at the center of the body. It's a skeletal muscle called the diaphragm, and it's shaped roughly like an umbrella, and it's connected at the base of the sternum and are all the way around the floating ribs. So it's connected to your ribs all the way around. And then it domes up into the chest cavity. When you breathe in, you're partly breathing in because the diaphragm is pressing down, and so it sucks the air in, makes a vacuum in the lungs. As it presses down, it widens out. And so the ribs expanding out to the side and the front and back is the gesture for the inhale. So you do want your ribs to swing on the inhale. There are some breaths that we can play with where you really focus on the movement of the ribs. And there are some strong breaths in yoga, like Bhastrika Pranayama, the bellows breath, where you really focus on swinging the side ribs open and closed to get more of that mobility, and that can be really wonderful. So the diaphragm presses down and out, sucks the air in, and of course the diaphragm pressing down then presses down on the organs and the viscera. So it presses on your stomach and intestines and kidneys and all that. And so that pressing down is what makes your belly go forward with the breath. So the belly opens out with the breath. If you are sensitive to it, you can feel that pressing down of the diaphragm all the way down through the belly into the bowl of the pelvis. And you can think of the base of the pelvis. So here's your hips. Your hip bones are coming up and coming down in the back. There's the pubic bone in the center. The diaphragm presses down, and there's a whole web of musculature at the base of the pelvis that cradles all of the organs and the viscera from the bottom. The center of that pelvic bowl is the perineum between the anus and genitals. And that's right at the middle of this kind of interlocking web of musculature there. And it can be helpful to think of the diaphragm as a dome and the base of the pelvis as a bowl. In somatic experiencing, we call this bells and bowls. So it's a bowl at the base of the pelvis and a bell at the diaphragm. And you can do a couple of different things with these two. The one at the bottom is sometimes called the pelvic diaphragm. So there's the respiratory diaphragm and the pelvic diaphragm. And so there's these two bodies of musculature. When the in-breath comes in and the respiratory diaphragm presses down, there can be a natural movement that can be really sweet to amplify, which is to relax and open out the pelvic diaphragm so that it goes in the same direction. So with the inhale, there can be a pressing down muscularly that travels through the organs down to the base of the body, the base of the pelvic bowl, that can then press also down. And this is the beginning of a yogic breath that leads toward one of the holds called Mula Bandha. We'll talk about bandhas or breath holds and locks another time, perhaps. But it can be a very wonderful way to bring attention to the pelvic floor and to begin to breathe through the pelvic floor to feel how the diaphragm and the base of the pelvis can breathe together. That can be really, really wonderful and can feel good. So, but the general movement we have for the breath is that on the in-breath, there's this pressing down. So, broadly, I'm going to encourage us to think of the in-breath as traveling down into the body. And that's different from sometimes how it feels, and we'll do a breath in a moment that feels like this. Sometimes it feels like the in-breath is rising up, like, oh, I sort of fill up the belly and then the chest and then the top of the chest. And there is a breath in yoga where you fill in that order, low belly, mid-chest, upper chest. This is called the vase breath. So you're filling up from the bottom up. So that's true, but I think it's still helpful energetically to orient toward the in-breath as being down. So try that a couple times here. Just play with it. As you breathe in, feel the movement down into the body. See if you can feel how the diaphragm presses down. You can put your hands at your low ribs also to feel that. Diaphragm presses down, lungs fill up. And then as you breathe out, floating ribs will drop back in. Diaphragm is going to release in and up into its dome shape. And so the out-breath goes up. So breathing in, direction is down. Breathing out, direction is up. Yeah. So physiologically, if by down and up, we're actually tracking the physical air coming in and out of the nose and the lungs and the movement of the diaphragm, this is the direction that we get. In is down, out is up. From that basic physiology then, there's a couple of ways we can breathe if we want to really try to get air into the whole lungs. And one of the most important aspects of that is to get the air out into the sides of the lungs, some of the wrinkly sides that don't get breath as much, and particularly to get the breath up to the top of the lungs. If you bring your fingers up and touch your collarbones, right across the top here, you can tuck your fingers behind them, either up and over the top, or you can dig up and under. I like over the top. If you take a deep in-breath, see if you can get your breath to push on your fingers. Can you get it all the way up? It takes a little bit of pushing to get it all the way up there. But the very top connectors of the lungs are right behind your collarbones, your clavicles. So you can actually feel the breath almost all the way up to the shoulder there. And you do that while you keep your shoulders relaxed as you do that. And often you have to really kind of get it right up into those very top portions. And so one of the ways to do that is to do this breath where it's like you're filling up from the bottom up. So this is a breath that shows up in the hatha, in the Hindu lineage hatha yoga world and in the Buddhist lineage hatha yoga world. Hatha yoga is both Buddhist and Hindu. It also, of course, shows up in the Sikh tradition. Famously through Yogi Bhajan and the Kundalini folks, but there's a whole body of Sikh yoga. And the origins of Hatha Yoga in the 11th and 12th century are Himalayan. And so some of the earliest texts of Hatha Yoga that describe breathing practices primarily actually come from the Buddhist tantric world rather than the Hindu tantric world. They come through the Vajrayana or Tibetan, what we would now call Tibetan Buddhist lineages. So there's Buddhist and Hindu Hatha Yoga. The word Hatha, H-A-T-H-A, the T has a dot under it. So you kind of flip the tongue back a little bit, Hatha. Hatha means force. And the force that Hatha Yoga is talking about probably originally meant forcing the cosmic breath energy that is metaphorically or literally a feminine goddess named Kundalini, the coiled one. In the Hindu system, it's Kundalini, the coiled one. In the Tibetan systems, it's often just called Lung. Which is the same word as prana, so breath energy or life energy, vitality. The force in hatha is not a muscular force, but it's actually forcing breath energy or kundalini or prana or lung into the central channel of the body to enliven the central column. So the force in hatha yoga is actually breath force. And it's not a big muscular breath. It's more like a directed, subtle breath. But that's how it got its name of Hatha Yoga, probably through different kinds of holds and locks in the body long before postural practice. There's a few particular shapes of the body where you hold the breath quite strongly and you press the breath in certain directions in order to wake it up. The main one of those, by the way, since we just did the bell of the diaphragm and the bowl of the pelvic floor, the main forcing breath in Hatha Yoga is, this is jumping ahead a little bit, but here's the jump ahead hint, is to breathe in very deeply down to the pelvic floor, but instead of relaxing and releasing the pelvic floor, you engage it and lift up. And then holding the breath, you press down with the diaphragm and up with the pelvic floor. So you're pressing the breath toward the center, and it gets pressed toward the belly center, called Manipur Chakra, the city of jewels. And it's in that pressing toward the center, in some of the early Hatha Yoga texts, including the Pradipika, the little lamp of Hatha Yoga from Swatmarama in the 15th century, that Kundalini awakens, and that the breath is pressed into the center. So this breath I want to show you occurs in the Hindu Hatha Yoga traditions. It also occurs in the Tibetan traditions, where it's often given the name the vase breath, a vase like a vase of flowers. And you can think of the vase as a sort of a classical urn that's rounded and then narrows at the top. And the idea with the vase breath is that you breathe in as if you're pouring a substance into a vase and it fills up from the bottom up. So the breath is still coming in and down, but it's filling up from the base of the pelvis all the way up to the throat. And so as you breathe in, you would very slightly engage the floor of the pelvis. So there's a little hold there. It's almost like you're just cradling the genitals and the lower organs in a tiny bit, right? It's and again, very subtle, but so not a lot of tension, but there's a little engagement. It's not just completely released out. Little engagement in the pelvic floor. You breathe in, and then the belly fills as the diaphragm presses down. And then the middle ribs open out as you continue to fill up the lungs. And at the very end, you try to fill the breath all the way up to the very tops of the lungs. And so relaxing the shoulders, but continuing the expansion all the way up through the top of the chest. And you would hold at the top, very full. And then breathing out in the opposite way. So relaxing from the top of the chest, and then the middle ribs float in. And then as the diaphragm really presses in and up, the belly empties, the base of the pelvis can engage a little bit more to press the air fully out and also to lift up the energy through the central column, and you empty completely. So you can do this a couple of ways. You can do it sitting up, like a standing up vase. You can do it lying down. You can do almost any of these breath practices lying down. For lying down practice, it's really nice to either put a pillow under your knees or have your knees up so that you're in a posture sometimes called constructive rest. And so you're laying on your back. This will really lengthen out the spine, and you'll feel more movement in the belly if you lay down, because the abdominal muscles aren't having to work as postural muscles. You don't have to keep yourself sitting up using them. And so it can be really wonderful to be lying down. You don't want to do this like slumped back into a couch or in any posture where the spine is bent or where you're curled forward or collapsed. You could try it, but you won't get very far. You need full space through the whole body of the torso to do this breath. So I'll guide us through like two short rounds of this vase breathing. So if you're sitting up, sit up really pretty nice and tall. If you're in a chair, feet flat on the floor is nice, spine tall. If you want to be laying down, lay down with your knees up if that feels good. Or if doing a full breath in this moment isn't the thing for you, just listen and do it later on in your own timing. You come into some variation of a long spine. You can empty your belly out, empty the breath to begin, and then take a full breath in just to reset, and a long breath out, and then empty completely to begin the vase breath. Really line the head up right over the heart, right over the belly, And then begin to breathe in, pouring the breath into the body. Engage the base of the pelvis a little bit. Fill the belly. And then when you're about halfway full, begin to expand the ribs and fill out the chest. And when you're almost full, give another little burst of breath and expand right through the shoulders, keeping the shoulders down, but let them get wider so you really fill right up to the top of the lungs and hold to the top for a few moments when you get there. And then from that top held position, relax very much through the shoulders, let go of the breath, and a long breath out, relaxing from the top ribs down to the middle ribs, which pour in, diaphragm is releasing, empty the belly, and then empty completely at the bottom with a little engagement through the pelvic floor. Hold the breath out for just a moment. And then the same thing again, inhaling, let the breath fall all the way into the pelvic bowl, fill the belly, fill the side ribs, fill out the chest and all the way up to the top of the chest. Holding there. And breathing out from the top, letting go. And letting go of the mid ribs, all the way down through the belly. And breathing out completely here. And then just let it go, breathe naturally for a couple of breaths. So this is a simple version of the vase breathing. This is the foundation for all of the breath practices that come further on in the Tibetan or Vajrayana Buddhist tantric systems, including the heating breath known as tummo that will come later on in training. But this is the start for that. If you want to do a practice of vase breathing, what you might do is and you set up the way we set up, do maybe three full rounds, so three fully engaged breaths, empty completely, feel it, feel your energy. Whenever you're feeling energy during breathing, you want to, you don't want to push too far into being lightheaded, or if anything feels off, don't do it. Back off, breathe less intensely. But you can do it pushing into a zone where there's that kind of tingly brightness through the body and through the visual field. Sometimes I don't like to breathe, you know, to the point where I'm like, I don't want to black out or get too tingly. But if you're laying on your back, you know, or you've got some pillows around, you know, like, it's okay to go quite full. There's a question, do I recommend doing this with Ujjayi breath? Mostly I don't do the vase breath with Ujjayi because the principle of the vase breath is to get very, very full. And so Ujjayi breath actually slows the breath down slightly. So you could do it if what you want is to really stretch out the length of the breath, but the intent in Ujjayi is a little bit different than this very full breath. I don't think it's a problem to combine them, but often what I'm really focusing on is just getting as full as possible. And so I don't need to constrict the breath at all there. I want to really let it pour in. But this is a good, but it's a good segue to bring in Ujjayi breath again. We did this a little bit in the meditation. Ujjayi, this is a Sanskrit term meaning victorious or hero's breath. Jaya is victory. So Ujjayi breath. This is a breath that can be done very light or more vigorously. And it's quite a versatile breath. When it's done quite vigorously, it can tend to be warming in the body. But when it's done quite gently, it tends to be cooling. And so you can use it for either. The heart of Ujjayi breath is a little contraction in the throat. And so if you swallow, you'll feel how the center of the throat lifts in the swallow. That little lift is part of the action of Ujjayi. And you can do it without swallowing, of course. You just lift the front of the throat a little bit, like it's closing off, and then you breathe through that space. And what you should get is a little hissing, like a soft, benevolent Darth Vader kind of hiss. If I do it quite strongly, so stronger means more contraction, of course, right? So if I do it quite strongly, you'll really hear that hiss. Mostly I'll do Ujjayi quite a bit more gently than that. And you'll, some teachers of forms of yoga, like Ashtanga yoga in the Patabi Joyce tradition, this is a flowing vinyasa practice where you're jumping in and out of postures and doing sun salutations between each round of postures, often in a very set sequence. Traditional Ashtanga yoga suggests that students hold a gentle Ujjayi breath the whole time through the entire practice, or for the entire hour sum of practice. I like doing that myself in yoga. It's not, it's different to not do it, but it's not wrong to not do it in Ujjayi. Some teachers emphasize it, some teachers don't as much. When you do it quite strongly, I would do it more as part of a pranayama practice. I would do a few and then hold the breath, and you could do it as part of some other breath cycles that we can look at. But as a gentle breath, it does a particular important thing. And this gets back to the basic physiology of breathing. It seems like, and many of us have heard the instruction to breathe quite deeply, especially if you've done a lot of yoga, not so much if you do Qigong. Qigong often will emphasize not breathing to the limit of your lungs, but actually breathing to a kind of, you know, three quarters full sort of breath. They'll say that they'll do the same thing with range of motion. So if you're doing a gesture, you know, where you're opening out the arms, you're not doing it as a stretch to try to pull back into the, you know, the connective tissue of the inner shoulder, for instance. If I'm opening my arms and the shoulders, I'm going to come to about three quarters of my range of motion and about three quarters of a full breath, and then exhale back to center. There's much more focus on the smooth cycle than there is on either stretching connective tissue the way that we would in yoga, or stretching the limits of the breath the way that we did in vase breath a moment ago. So, but it can seem like taking a really deep breath, getting more oxygen is always the right thing to do, but it's actually not. And there is such a thing as over-breathing. Many conditions where breath is compromised, like when one is having an asthma attack, or when folks are having a panic attack sometimes, there can be the sense of like, I'm not getting enough air, and there can be a gasping for breath. Very often, one of those kinds of attacks can be interrupted and calmed, not by trying to get a full breath, but actually by relaxing the breath and not letting oneself breathe all the way full. So just breathing a half lung full of breath and then a long exhale. I'll say more another time, and maybe I'll just put some links in. It's not so much my specialty, but it's important to know some of the information here around the appropriate balance of oxygen and carbon dioxide in the body. As you know, of course, we breathe in oxygen and we send it around through the blood, the lungs feed the oxygen to the capillaries, the arteries take the blood around the body, the veins take the waste, mostly in the form of carbon dioxide, back to the lungs, and we breathe out the carbon dioxide. And of course, in the marvelous symbiosis, the photosynthesizing plants like the trees, they do the exact opposite. They breathe in our carbon dioxide and they breathe out oxygen for us. Thank you very much. So we breathe with them all the time. So Because oxygen is one of our primary nutrients, it may seem like the more oxygen, the better, the less carbon dioxide, the better. But actually, you need carbon dioxide for many, many core neurological functions and physiological functions. And it's much more about maintaining the optimal balance between oxygen and carbon dioxide in the body, not like maxing out oxygen and minimizing carbon dioxide. And so slowing down the breath a bit and breathing not quite as full and lengthening the exhale, and doing all of that through the nose, which slows it down even more. All of this is a way to not overbreathe. So to cut down a bit on the oxygen we're taking in and actually rebalance oxygen and carbon dioxide in the body in a way that can be really helpful. So slowing down the breath can be helpful. And that's, I think that's one of the main things that Ujjayi breath does. A gentle constriction in the throat, this soft narrowing of the passageway, slows the breath down. The slower breath also gets to filter through the lungs in a different way. And we'll get on with the heart rate in a moment, but it helps also to bring us out of sympathetic nervous system states that are alarming and come back into more deactivated, more parasympathetic states. So then the suggestion here with Ujjayi is a couple things. One is, I'm not going to suggest like, oh, you should hold an Ujjayi breath through the whole day. I think that's a muscular contraction, it's a constriction. I only really do it during formal practice. But through the whole day, one of the things that I will play with is certainly just breathing through the nose and watching the rhythm of my breath. So I'm trying not to breathe too much. I'm trying to really feel like, is my breath supporting me to feel the balance of energy that I want to feel? Do I feel calm? Do I feel like I'm available for the world around me? Do I need a little more energy? Do I want to increase the in-breath, breathe a little faster, that kind of thing. But the Ujjayi breath, it can be wonderful in meditation to take up a very gentle Ujjayi and hold that for the throughout your meditation. And if you particularly want to bring the attention into a tighter focus on the breath, you can actually use the point of Ujjayi as a location for watching the breath. So when we're doing mindfulness of breathing, often we'll watch the breath at the nose tip or the center of the chest or the belly. Those are the kind of the standard places. In some of the northern traditions, Chan and Zen traditions and Son traditions, and some Taoist traditions, there's commonly the instruction to watch the breath at the low belly in the center of the body. This is the point known as the hara or the dantian. Hara is the Japanese term, dantian is the Chinese. So you can also use the throat point as then the place where you feel the breath with Ujjayi, that little hissing spot. You can use that as an anchor for the attention with the breath. It is a chakra, of course, an energy center in the body. And so you can feel that place. There's a minor chakra at the very back of the mouth also. And so sometimes if your Ujjayi is really high, you can feel it there as well. So that'll slow down the breath a little bit. You can do it through your meditation. And you could do it just in the beginning of a meditation a little more strongly as a way to gather attention, focus crisply on the breath, and really establish some concentration there. The last thing I'll say on the kind of for tonight on the breath, and we'll do more breath variations next week, is to encourage in meditation two particular ways of timing the breath. We did a little practice today where we counted. I start at zero for an empty breath, and then on the in-breath, I'll count one, two, three. So nice and slow, so it's emphasizing calm. I'll count up as high as I get to on a relaxed breath day. I'll maybe get up to five or six. So get up to about maybe five. I'll pause at the top, and then I'll count down from there, five, four, three, same speed, back down to zero. So if you count up to whatever number and then down from that same number, you're making the in and out breaths the same length. So this is often a very lovely breath It can give the sense of being balanced. And as with all of these, like, just play with it. See if you like it. See if you like how it shifts your energy. Is it calming? Is it energizing? Does it do something else? So balancing the two sides of the breath is a beautiful breath. In yoga, sometimes we'll call that samavritti pranayama. Sama means same, and vritti is turning. So equal turning breath, breath the same in the in and the out. If you want to emphasize calm, and a breath variation that you can take on is to breathe out a little longer than you breathed in. So if I breathed in for 5, I might breathe out for 6 or 7 or 8, something like that. To any of these, you can add a holding of the breath at the top or the bottom or both. I'll talk more about breath holding next week. For this week, I'll encourage you to play with these basic breaths. Play with the Ujjayi breath, with the vase breath, really filling all the way up and all the way empty. Play with the direction of the breath, pouring in and down and out and up. And then with these, with a couple of basic breath ratios, counting equal turning breath or a slightly lengthened exhale. With all of them, you're just sensing energy, how it feels, if it feels good. If any of the breaths don't feel good, don't do them. Really notice that. Be like, oh, this doesn't feel good today. What if I lengthen a little bit? Does that feel good? That doesn't feel good. What if I shorten a little bit? You know, and just really, really see what you notice there. All right. So today was all essentially foundational grounding and calming breaths. Next week we'll go into we'll talk about breath holding and some of the more vigorous breaths and continue from there. All right, blessings. Thanks for your warm attention.